Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, and earned a bachelor's degree in philosophy and a master of divinity degree. He's been a Redemptorist priest for 50 years and is a renowned preacher and lecturer and has led hundreds of workshops throughout America and abroad. Since 1973, he's been the co-founder, president, and CEO of Life Directions, which provides peer-to-peer motivation and mentoring to at-risk young people. His name? Father John Phillips. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and with Father John Phillips, who since 1973 has been the co-founder, president, and CEO of Life Directions. Father, would you please lead us in an opening prayer tonight?
I will. And the value I would like to pray over is the value of breaking through any addictions that control people's lives. And so I pray, Lord, that everyone who listens to this will feel that they can accept what they cannot change and change what they can and get the wisdom to dare to be different so that they can make a difference in the world into which they are being sent to make a difference in the lives of others.
I think that's an Irish prayer, isn't it?
It could be. That's a little bit of luck.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
My mother and father, they married right before the Second World War, and their first child came a year before, and I was a Pearl Harbor baby. And so, therefore, my father grew up in St. Louis and stayed there most of his life as a working in the telephone company, and my mother was a secretary, and the two of them met, and I'm the second of eight children, and they both have passed. But I grew up as a teenager with a family and learned an awful lot about family life from my parents.
What's the biggest thing you learned from Mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad?
From my mom, I learned a real simple thing. I used to tell my mom, the reason I'm messed up is that she didn't raise me right. And I don't know if anyone has ever said that, but if you have, you're going to hear what my mother told me. She said, if you burn your rear end, you're going to sit on your own blister. So take responsibility for your life. My father, he taught me differently. He taught me the idea of live with the consequences of your actions and only do what really gives you joy, because that will be your life. And just don't work for a living, but work for life.
Father, when and how did you decide you had a vocation to be a priest?
I decided to be a priest. I was, you know how children play? So I played priest when I was in grade school. And I saw a priest preaching one day, and he just seemed so natural about it that I really wanted to be like him. And so I went there in the 50s to school, and when I was ordained in 1968, the reason that I was ordained was different from the reason I got started. Because when I got started, I just wanted to be a foreign missionary. And what I discovered when I got ordained was that I was going to be on a mission, but it wasn't going to be in a foreign country. It was actually going to be in the United States.
Why did you decide to become a Redemptorist priest?
A Redemptorist is a congregation committed to the most abandoned, the most disconnected of people from any kind of a system, be the church or anything else. And they're going to be, if they're left alone, almost like feeling lost. And so we really are committed to finding ways to connect with disconnected people. The charism, that's the fancy word for the reason we exist in the Catholic Church, is to be committed to a wounded world and to be witnesses of the Redeemer on mission to a wounded world.
You were formed in 1732 by St. Alphonsus Liguori. Tell us about your founder.
Our founder, Alphonsus Liguori, was a lawyer, both a civil lawyer and a canon lawyer. And he got very sickly when he was ordained as a priest and took some time away, and he found this value of the people who were not being served when he was out in the country unrest. And he then said, I want to do something for them, and I want to do it because of the virtue of hope. I wanted to bring hope to people, and the issue of hope is what the moral life is all about. And when people are hopeful, they tend to have a moral life, and if they tend to be hopeless, they tend not to. And that intuition of his became our founding value, which is moral theology. How do you make your faith work?
A couple of months ago, we were blessed to have another Redemptorist priest on the show who grew up in Southwest Detroit, Joseph Tobin, who's now the cardinal of Newark, the latest cardinal in America. Tell us about Cardinal Tobin.
Cardinal Tobin. When Joe Tobin came to Holy Redeemer, I was there. And he's 10 years younger from me. And so when he came there, I met his whole family. He's the oldest of 13. And his mother's a wonderful woman. And she's raised a wonderful group of people. And he was a real powerful leader, a community organizer, wonderful in languages. And now I hear he's up to 5 languages, tells jokes in all 5. And he's really an enjoyable man. And he has a lot of common sense, a lot of wisdom. He's gone through a lot of struggles. And he really is bringing the joy of the gospel to people.
You've been a salesman for God for 50-plus years. What's the biggest thing you've learned in being a priest for 50-plus years?
That I am sent to serve and not to be served, and that I'm not to stay in the church, but be on the street and be among the people in their struggles, and to take on their struggles as my struggles, and to be able to bring hope to them and bring joy to them. And I find it by working in public schools. I find it by working in the neighborhoods of Southwest Detroit, where I started this program. And I found it by working with people like myself, my peers, who would inspire me to stay true to the mission.
In those 50-plus years, you've said 18,000-plus masses. And so you've raised the body and blood of Christ each time, 18,000 plus times. When you do that, what do you think about?
I think about that he never killed anyone. I think about how he wants life to be for everyone. He wants everyone to live. Even those who would have killed him, he wants them to live. He doesn't want to lose anyone. So when I receive the Eucharist, I receive him because I was lost, and he found me, and I was a sinner, and he set me free. So that's kind of like a sermon that I live, but I don't see people when they're falling as not being worthy of my touch because somebody touched me when I was that way.
We're talking to Father John Phelps, who in 1973 started Life Directions. When we come back, we'll ask him, how did it ever start? And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Father John Phelps, who has ministered in Detroit, Chicago, St. Louis, Tucson, Oregon, Indiana, and several universities. Let's go back to 1973. How was it you co-founded Life Directions?
I was sent here by my leader of the Redemptorist to get to the cause of violence among teenagers. And he wanted me to work in out of our parish at Holy Redeemer, but not to be a parish priest. He wanted me to find the cause of violence and then deal with the cure, which sounds very much like our congregation's commitment to bringing life out of a death situation. So I went to the public school, Western High School, and the first kid met me and said, did somebody die? Why would a priest be here in school? And then the second kid got mad at me because he was just kicked out of Holy Redeemer, which is our high school, and because he was wanting to sell drugs. So I knew I was in the right place at the right time. But then what do I do? How do I move forward? And the principal kind of challenged me to see if I'm there for the reason the school exists and not just for some other reason because I would be seen as a spiritual leader. And so then I found a partner of mine who wanted to go into Cody High School up in Northwest Detroit, and he was a priest as well. So the two of us met together, and we met a a sister, an Adrian Dominican sister, Rosalie Esquerra, and she was working in Western High School, and she was working with dropout prevention. And young people who don't drop out of school tend not to be violent. They stay in school, they make it. All right, so the violence happens because they're not organized, and they're not organized in their first time out of home, out of their home, into a school, so they don't live in public life well, and they drop out, and they get into violence. So I says, how did you get into the public school? She taught me, and the three of us co-founded this work with a married couple of six children, Alex and Judy McDonald, and they lived in Southwest Detroit, and they couldn't afford the Catholic school, and they were going to send their children to the public school, and they wanted to know what I was doing to make the public school work. And so that was the challenge of the five of us to co-found this work. And so in 1974, we began our work in public schools, and we did it in order to wake up young people before it's too late. And what we discovered was the young people who were awake with their values were connected to their roots, and their roots would be their elders. It might be a grandmother, it might be an uncle. It was somebody, today you would call it a mentor. They are using the word mentoring today. So in 74, that wasn't a word that was commonly used. And we found that they were making it, living in the same social environment, the same economic struggles, the same classrooms, the same neighborhoods, the same food, everything else is the same. The only thing is they were making it and the others weren't. And we actually became aware that it's like H2O. If you have one that's making it and they touch the other two, you can make it work. And so we saw the value of a partnership between one to two. We do it in groups of 15. We had a chemistry professor, Mr. Granderson, who taught us the formula. And if you need to deal with more violence, you may go one-on-one. But one to two is a natural thing. Frank Briglia was the counselor, but we realized that we weren't working with counselors as much as teachers. So the whole teaching profession became the way in which we would complement them. And that's how we got started.
You've devoted 45 years of your life to this ministry.
Correct.
What's the genius of Life Directions?
The genius of Life Directions is going to be found in a word called forgiving. And that's, for many, the fifth step of an addictive program. And to become aware that when people are not able to forgive, they'll tend to do what was done to them. If they're wounded, they'll tend to wound others with the same kind of a wound. And so to break the cycle of violence is like breaking an addiction. And so what we found the genius was, if you could breathe forgiving, but always remember what you forgive. Don't forget it, but remember it as forgiven. Then you're remembering the forgiven side of something that happened to you. And then you'll be able to forgive others. But to forgive, you can't have a reason. And the way to remember it is if you're mother raised you in a way that taught you that you were lovable, you probably did things that were not so lovable, like I did many things. And my mother loved me when I wasn't lovable. And so the unconditional way of loving, which is a mother's way of loving and a father's way of loving, is the genius of forgiveness. And that's the genius of Life Directions.
If you want to learn more, www.lifedirections.org. Father, you mentioned mentoring, and I hear that over and over amongst guests. A regular thing. Did we have mentors when we were kids? And if so, who were they?
Okay. When you were kids, and you were probably around my age, I'll guess that to be accurate, the neighborhood was raising us. If you did something wrong, you better tell your mother because she's going to hear about it, and she better hear it from you first. So all of that kind of dynamic was the uncles and the aunts and the relatives and the friends and the neighbors, and people were with people and a lot more open. Sometimes you live in neighborhoods where they didn't even lock the door. And so all of that would have been called mentoring. But we called it the extended family. We call it takes a village to raise a child. But the village would be called a whole network of relationships. And so that's what we had.
Don't kids today have those same mentors?
I think today, when you get out of your car, you lock it. When you go into your home, you make sure it's secure. You don't necessarily let strangers meet you unless you feel safe. You don't train your children to just be with anybody they meet and look forward to meeting new relationships. You teach them how to be cautious. The environment is different. Neighborhoods are not close with each other. Now, some neighborhoods are. And those that have what I just described that was there before, wonderful. But most neighborhoods, especially in violent areas, especially in poverty, when people are poor today, it's different than poverty before. Because today, it's much more challenging in an economy that's so technologically driven and the communication age and the idea of all the ways in which we're now professionally hiring people. It's harder for people to get ordinary jobs and to grow as a teenager, make those mistakes of 16, 18 years old that you can then mature. So there's college for some and there's a career for others, but sometimes they don't have somebody loving them to make sure they stay on track.
When you're ministering to the kids today,
yes,
what do they teach you?
Ooh, young people teach me today the struggle that they have, but the joy they want for their children. They teach it to me if I ask the right questions. They won't teach it directly, so they need to have drama. You'll hear about the STEM program, yes. Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math. We bring the A into that, called the STEAM. So they have a STEAM. And the STEAM is the arts and drama and theater and music, whatever sparks them. That's why our name Life Directions means your life direction is your spark. So when you know your spark, you got your life directions. They love the arts and theater and music and drama. If you can organize that and mature them so they become excellent, then they know the joy of really becoming a full person. But it's a lot of questions, not answers, that they need. And the questions need to believe that they have the answer inside of them. They just don't know it.
We're talking to Father John Phelps, the co-founder, president, and CEO of Life Directions. God's blessed you with hundreds, if not thousands, of mentors these last 45 years. What have the mentors taught you?
Jojo Dustin, the banjo priest, Holy Redeemer, Southwest Detroit. He said to me, John, don't get caught up in the sizzle. Make sure you stay with the substance. And I'll never forget that because he was on Johnny Carson's show, which was an evening show in the 60s. And he was very famous, Dixieland bands in New Orleans. And his funeral, the Father Joe Tobin, who now is Cardinal Joe Tobin, celebrated because he was his mentor as well, taught us to make sure that your prayer life keeps you solid and then go out and be what you pray, but don't necessarily give it the way you've received it. Give it the way that people can receive it. Be customer-driven, because otherwise they're not going to listen to your music. So if you want to play in public, make sure the people enjoy the way you do it. And then, but make sure when you do it, there's some substance beneath the sizzle.
We're talking to Father John Phelps, and I'm Jack Rasul. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasul, and we're with Father John Phelps, a renowned preacher and lecturer. He has led hundreds of workshops throughout America and abroad. Father, getting back to mentoring, talk to us about the grandmothers in our inner cities.
The grandmothers are the wisdom of our inner cities. A grandmother is the one who oftentimes is raising the grandchildren, because the mother and our father are so much needed to provide, to have a job, to have two jobs, and to live with the struggles of maybe not having a car and other things like that. That the grandmothers are there when the children come home. The grandmothers are there to get them out. So the grandmother. And a grandmother is much more of a person that a child will go to, because the grandmother just loves you just the way you are and doesn't have to discipline you the way the mother or father might feel that. Or when they do it in a way that they're much more patient, because they're not as preoccupied with providing. They're not as worried about things that they have to do today for the child to survive. Now, I'm describing the grandmother. Sometimes the grandmother's a great-grandmother. Sometimes the grandmother might be an elder who's not your natural grandmother, but a grandmother is the one who really nurtures values.
On May 19th, you have your annual tribute gala. This year, it's at the GM World Headquarters, the Renaissance Center, in the Winter Garden. And you're going to honor Jack and Annette Aronson.
Absolutely.
Talk to us about this huge heart of a man, mountain of a man, Jack Aronson.
Jack Aronson and his wife grew up in Ferndale, right north of the city. But they love people. And they love things that are clean on this planet. And they want people to eat healthy food. So what do you think he named his new company? Clean Planet Foods. So that tells you a lot about his character and his wife. And I've met his family. And they're wonderful people, beautiful people investing in the city, investing in people whose zip code keeps them from having the opportunities that they could have otherwise. And sometimes the system didn't catch them in their early years, and they missed things like phonics in their first and second grade. And I stuttered when I was in seventh and eighth grade, and so I was challenged that way. His kind of care would have cared for me. So I find Jack and his wife and what they do in public life is such a wonderful gift to so many people. So it's a great to call him our guiding light so that he can guide the lights of his peers, which are corporate and individual donors who could invest in the city among the poor and have a return on the investment in the way that they value, which is no violence, peace building, and great citizens for the next century.
That's May 19th, annual gala tribute at the GM World Headquarters in the Winter Garden. If you want to learn more, www.lifedirections.org. There is another man with a huge heart for Southwest Detroit. Our mutual friend, Frank Venegas.
Frank Venegas is going to give the award to Jack Aronson. And Frank Venegas is the name that Southwest Detroit would always remember because it's ideal, which is the name of his group. And he, just to tell you a little bit about Frank, took a section of Mary Grove College and created a whole room for people to grow in wisdom and knowledge. He renovated that. So imagine a person who would run this kind of a company and then be able to deal with education. He values education. He values letting people know that they're valuable. He works with ordinary people and does an extraordinary job. And so when we gave him the award last year, he became now the one to hand it on to the next one because he's the peer who is inspiring his peer. So that's the idea of the Peers Inspiring Peer Guiding Light Award.
Another person you're honoring with the achievement honoree is Terry Larkin.
Absolutely. Terry Larkin, who's the senior vice president at Lear Corporation. I know him because of his father-in-law, Joe Boyle. Joe Boyle, many years ago, before anybody knew who we were in the 70s, was investing in us. And he had his children and his family, and they raised them well. And now that he's retired and enjoying life, he was given the award many years ago. But when he was received the award, he brought his son-in-law, who is Terry Larkin. And we got to know Terry. And Terry Larkin's a way of investing in us is wonderful. He's now the chair of our board. He is the chair of Life Directions in Detroit. And he is part of our national board because we want to expand our work throughout the country. We want to be able to make that difference. He wants to do it with us. And he invested in us and he believes in us. He's receiving the Lifetime Achievement Award because he's invested many years before we were known. And so, therefore, we want to honor the man who invested in us because he believed in us and he believes in the children.
We're talking to Father John Phelps, who's a renowned preacher and lecturer nationwide. Let's talk about a few of the lectures. One you give is on vision, spiritual IQ.
The spiritual IQ. When you hear the word fear, usually means to most people something that you're afraid of that could cause you violence or could cause you pain or could cause you whatever. You could either give it or get it because it's either you fight or you fright, you know. And so fear controls. What happens if fear becomes a friend? How do you do that? How do you turn fear into a friend? How do you make that happen? Become aware of where you find your freedom. And your freedom is where you belong. And if you belong in a relationship that's healthy, you'll be able to reflect and know when to choose one way or the other. You won't just react. And so your freedom will become excellent, because now you'll be excellent. And your excellence will be something you advance, and you advance it toward redemption. So we have fear for life, which is freedom excels advancing redemption, so that you want others to be free. So you want to forgive them and not kill them, to use an extreme example. The other way of fear is when it's false. When you live the lie that revenge is the only way, then you start to expect somebody's going to do something to you or you're going to do it to them. It starts to appear, and when it appears, it's real, and you're dead. So we have the fear of death, but we have the fear of life. And so many people don't even know they're afraid to live, because they don't know that when they forgive, they're free.
Another lecture you have is on forgiveness. Please.
Yes. Forgiveness. When I share forgiveness, I usually run into people who will tell me that when I forgive, I won't forget. And I'll have it with a young man who came out of prison, and I'm never going to ever forget the fact that I killed somebody. And then I met a woman whose boyfriend he had killed. And she saw him in public life after being in prison for many years and wanted to meet him. When she met him, the two of them together grew to forgive. And she forgave him for killing her boyfriend, and he forgave himself for having done it. But they're never going to forget it. So you don't forget what you forgive. And she did it not because she understood or she did a psychological testing on him. She did it because she wanted to. Somebody loved her enough to give her the wisdom of what it means to forgive unconditionally and never forget what you forgive. Of course, I know this from my spiritual life, that he kept the nail marks. So therefore, after death, he didn't get rid of the nail marks, but he didn't kill the ones who killed him. He forgave them.
We're talking to Father John Phelps, and I'm Jack Crisul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Crisul. We're with Father John Phelps, President and CEO of Life Directions, which provides peer-to-peer motivational and mentoring to at-risk young people. Another lecture you give is on courage.
Courage. Courage, when I did the opening prayer, was to have the courage to change what I can. To have courage, I need someone to give me counsel. I need somebody to give me advice. To have courage, I need to test before I follow a spirit. So I test the spirit in order to have courage. But courage comes inside of me. And courage means I can stand on my own, and I don't need to have somebody else carry me along. So courage means I can stand on my own, but I seek counsel. So if I had somebody in my life that we call mentors, or we have a friend, or somebody who's dealing with who I am and knows my dark side and can give me encouragement, then I will have the courage I need, and then I'll be able to change what I can and accept what I cannot change.
The last lecture topic, Father, devotion.
Devotion is a beautiful gift. If the people who are listening to me are devoted to someone, they're going to appreciate what I'm going to share, I believe. Devotion means that you always want to be afraid of not doing the right thing for this person, and you want to know the wisest way to be a present. So a flower at Mother's Day, or to your wife, or to a friend that you have, a kiss, a hug, a way of showing this intimacy. It flows from being devoted. So devoted people are people who have fear for life and they have the wisdom that comes from it. They have courage, and they seek counsel to do it, and they understand what to do with the knowledge they have. And they never want to use knowledge for anything except to make life better.
You're 75 years old, Father.
Yeah.
Yet you're still pounding the pavement every day. You're very vibrant, very young thinking. Why and how?
I'm glad you ask why and how. Viktor Frankl, back in the Second World War, was put into prison, and he knew why he wanted to survive. And so he wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning, and he said, if you know why, you can put up with any how. His why was his wife, who was in another concentration camp. And she, although she passed, kept him alive. And he came out of that, and he taught the principle of the why controls the how. Why do I do this? Because I'm sent. I'm sent because I was ordained. I was given the power of the Eucharist that you asked me about in the beginning. But I was sent to serve people who are anorexics to most values that I believe in.
It's obvious you have a partner.
Yes.
Our Heavenly Father.
Absolutely.
And I quote you now. You say, God is closer to us than anyone else we will ever meet. Tell us about God.
God is the one who loves me when I wasn't lovable. God is the one who sees all the potential I have and wants it to be excellent. God is the one that gave me my five talents and said, make them five more. God is the one who wants me to be with him. And God is not just him. It's him and her. It's the entire meaning of my life. And so I've come to find God, but I found him in little people, especially in children, the children who have on their face just an openness to life. So for me, the children teach me what God really looks like, because that's probably why Jesus taught us to become like a child.
All right, you have an intimate relationship with God, but some people say, Father, God never talks to me.
Absolutely. And especially in noise. The noise is not the way God talks. But in the noise, that's the way people talk. And so unless I can get silent and live with boredom, I'll never be able to learn the wisdom of who this God is that talks to me in silence. Now, I can't understand why people who have cell phones don't know that God's talking. Because if your phone's not on, you can't hear him. But as soon as you turn it on, it's right there. So you're mind is like a cell phone. All you got to do is turn it on to him, but you got to be tuned in to the right station. And unless you're tuned in, you won't be able to hear him. And how does he wake you up? He sends people into your life. He sends people into my life. He sent this Sister Rosalie into my life. He sent this priest, Father Alex, into my life. He sent Alex and Judy into my life. But I had to be listening for him. And then he speaks through people, but then I had to be alone to listen what they mean to me and what I mean to them.
Speaking of sending people into your life and listening, you're a great admirer of the late, great Ernie Harwell, arguably the most beloved person in the history of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
What struck you so much about Ernie Harwell?
What struck me was something that I heard after he had passed. And I said, yeah, that's Ernie. They did a play on Ernie, and they did it in 9 different parts because he lived to be 91. And the thing that really struck me was a young man who was asking him a question. And he said to them, where did you go on your honeymoon? And he told the young man where he went. And the young man asked him, what did you do after your honeymoon? And he said, I'm still on it. He taught me that if you fall in love, stay in love. And love it just the way they are. And accept life as it is. He never missed a game unless there was a child or someone got sick. I think he only missed 2 games in his life. And he was a real genius, and he helped me with teenagers learn how to talk in public. And he also taught me the difference between sizzle and substance, just like Father Joe did. He knew how to do sizzle, as you heard him.
The play Ernie,
yes,
was written by our own Mitch Albom.
Yes.
It is now the most viewed play in the history of Michigan.
Wonderful.
One of his famous quotes was, whenever you have the choice of being right or kind, always choose kind.
Absolutely. And if your truth is not lovable, it's love that's not true. And that's what I learned from Bernard of Clairvaux in the 11th century. And Ernie Harwell lived it. And so it's a beautiful gift that he was kind and gentle and never got lost in the sizzle of his name.
Another person that was phenomenal for our town was the late, great Frank Stella.
Oh, Frank Stella. Now, there is a practical man who knew how to make things happen. Frank Stella would help so many people that nobody knew. Frank Stella, in 1977, got to know me through Judge James A. Hathaway. And when he came to know me, and he taught me how to build an organization, we're still here 45 years later, because he knew how to organize it, put it together, and he made sure that I could be independent from him and dependent upon him. So he taught me the difference between being independent or being against the system. And he taught me how to work with all kinds of people, the good, bad, and the ugly, so to speak, and to always see the genius and goodness inside of everybody, no matter if they couldn't see it or not.
A modern-day person that a lot of people admire, Pope Francis. What impresses you the most about him?
He's able to be controversial. He's able to say things that people don't want to hear. And he does it in a gentle, kind way. And when people don't like what he's saying, he doesn't use power to crush them. He just uses persuasion to encourage them to listen. Like the joy of the gospel when he wrote that. He's talked about the church being a field hospital. He talked about being with where the people are at, not with where the pulpit is at. So he taught us about how to get on the street and not stay in the sanctuary. He actually is out here in the community. He's looking at the environment. Laudato Si is the name of the one for the environment. Then he taught us about love, the joy of love in dealing with people just the way they're at.
Could you please lead us in a closing prayer?
Let's pray in the words of Francis. Preach always, and if you need to, use words. Let every person listening know that they're an answer to someone's prayer. And Lord, wake them up to the gifts they've been given so that they know that their gift is meant to be a gift for someone else, especially someone that they might be afraid of at first. And may they turn their fear into their faith so that there's a future for our children.
The greatest sermon ever given had no words. And Father John Phelps, you live that every day.
Thank you.
Keep up the great work. Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Pasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Strong.
Believe in yourself.